So I had thought to speak something, because we just observed Ram Navami, to speak something about Lord Ramachandra. Besides, it comes during spring season, it's such a wonderful time of the year. Something that I like about Ram Navami is it's a nice response to the question I often hear people ask. You always speak about Krishna. What about Lord Ramachandra? Your mantra is Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Worse, we don't hear so much about Rama. So this is a nice time of the year to speak something about Lord Rama Chandra. Sound effect, pardon. Close the door. Thank you. He'll be a nice boy when he grows up. We can't wait. When three things I want to speak about Ramachandra. One is how Shukadeva Goswami speaks about Lord Ramachandra when he begins in the ninth canto to introduce topics about him. The first thing that Shukadeva Goswami says, well, there's two things he first says. One is that Ramachandra is the personality of Godhead. And when he comes with his associates, the Chatur Vyuha, Sankarshan, Pradumna, and Aniruddha, in the form of Lakshman, Bharata, Shatrughna. And he's Vasudev of the Chaturvyuha. So if this was an American audience, I would have to explain. To all of you, you already know. In the spiritual world, there's unlimited numbers of Vaikuntha planets, spiritual planets. Unlimited numbers in the vastness of the unlimited spiritual sky. And in each of those Vaikuntha planets, there's a predominating or presiding personality, Lord Narayana. And Lord Narayana expands. We can't do that. Yogis can do that up to 8 times, but each time it's weaker, 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 weaker. So because the expansion of the yogi is of his material form. It's an image in the likeness of his material form, which itself is insubstantial, but the form of the Lord is substantial, or it's sat, eternality, chit, cognizant, and ananda, full of bliss. Material forms don't have those qualities. But Narayan, he's unlimited. So when he expands, the expansions are not diminished or weaker. They're of the same potency. Like the Brahma Samhita describes, Dīpārśya eva hīraśam taram abhyupetya. Like a dīpa, like a candle, you light from one candle another candle. And the next candle is of the same potency as the candle from which it was lit. 1 foot candle. I learned in ninth grade science. So the candle power is the same with the candle that's lit from the original. Similarly, when the personality of Godhead expands, Narayana expands, his forms of expansion are the same potency as him, and there's four. There's unlimited, but in each Vaikuntha planet, Vasudev, Sankarsan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha, the Chatur Vyuha. And then when it is time for Lord Ramachandra's descent, he descends along with his, Prabhupada uses this British term, aides-de-camp. Maybe it's a French term. And that means Ramachandra is the same as Vasudev. Lakshman is the same as Sankarsan. And Pradyumna and Aniruddha are the same as Shatrughna and Bharat. As above, so below is the same. So they simply descend. And it's the first point of Shukadeva Goswami is this is the personality of Godhead. And it's especially important because when Ramchandra makes his appearance and performs his pastimes, he's performing the pastime of an ideal king. And as an ideal king, he does things that are apparently quite worldly. Especially notably, he feels great pain when he loses Sita. Very apparently worldly emotions, separation from his beloved wife. He goes into deep states of lamentation, and his dear brother Lakshman tries to pull him out of the state of lamentation. Come on, you're a Kshatriya. Let's find Sita. Don't fall prey to this weakness. It's this mode of ignorance. Don't fall prey to lamentation. It's a chorus outside. So the exhibition of Ramachandra's deep feelings of separation from Sita is not like ours. Ours, when we feel separation from someone, it's mode of ignorance, it's lamentation, identification with the body, and we're separated from this body, is separated from that body, and woe is me. But the feelings of separation of Ramachandra, it's transcendental. It's vipralamba bhav. There's these terms in Sanskrit, sambhog, coming together, and vipralamba, separation. Love, when there's meeting, is very nice. Love, when there's separation, the transcendental science of rasa says, love intensifies in separation. So Rama's enacting a lila where he can feel the ecstasy of separation and do so many other things with so many other personalities. Jatayu and Sugriva and Hanuman and so on. Part of the drama of regaining Sita, redeeming Sita, rescuing Sita. It's part of his lila, but that apparently worldly exhibition of intense lamentation from his beloved. It's not like Romeo and Juliet. It's not like, you know, the classic boy misses the girl misses the boy, and they feel bad. And then it's a whole drama. Those dramas are perverted reflections of the transcendental pastimes of the Supreme Lord. In any case, Shukadeva Goswami wants us to understand from the very beginning, because the Lila Avatar, forms of the Lord, see if there's other pictures like Lord Srinadeva, that's the, or Varaha or Matsya Kurma, they're very clearly not worldly. They're otherworldly. But Ram's Leela appears to be like one of us, and that's one of the things, one of the aspects that attracts people to Ramayana. It's so relatable. He looks like one of us, but he's not. So from the very first thing, Shukadeva Goswami wants us to know, he's not one of us. He's the personality of Godhead, who is descending to this world to attract the hearts and the minds of souls of this realm to the spiritual realm, to him and to the spiritual realm. And the second thing, very next verse, he says to Maharaj Parikshit, you're a great Vaishnav. You've heard so many narrations of Ram. And I'm only going to describe, in summary, the bona fide ones. He doesn't use the word bona fide, but the authentic ones. Which means, even 5,000 years ago, there were lots of unauthentic ones. Kali Yuga had just begun, and there were already unauthentic ones. Kali Yuga is now more advanced, so guess what? There's more unauthentic ones. So where should we hear about the pastimes of Ram? The advice given by Shukadeva Goswami 5,000 years ago is we should hear only the authentic ones. We should be selective about when we're hearing transcendental topics, that the person and the reference source of that person are authentic, because you can get something else. And commonly, then otherwise, one does get something else. Where Ram is one of us, or it's mythology meant to tell us some moral lessons, and that's all that it is. It's mythology. That largely was due to Western influence, or even more specific, British influence, where everything India was backwards and everything European was best. So who could believe in all these very strange things? It's just mythology for weak-minded people to teach them lessons of life. That's the so it became a whole department, Indology. It's a nice euphemism for mythology, Indian mythology. But Shukadeva Goswami makes it very clear, no, these are actual narrations of the personality of Godhead who descends into this world and displays wonderful transcendental pastimes. Now, with those wonderful transcendental pastimes, he is teaching something besides attracting with his pastimes the hearts and the minds of others. He's coming in the role of the ideal king. Just as each of the forms of the Lord, we know from Bhagavad Gita, there are three things whenever the Lord appears he's doing. Right? Pritranaya sadhanam, vinashaya cha duskritam, dharma sang sapanartaya, sambhavami yuge yuge. He does those three things. He takes care of Radhan, he gives protection to the devotees, and he gives teachings. Reestablishes the principles of dharma by his teachings and by his actions. So, now I'm moving on to the pastime. This is the second thing that I wanted to speak about, and that is, as the ideal king must uphold dharma. So that means he must know what dharma is in order to uphold dharma. He must be dharmic, must be a follower of dharma. And so, just like we find in Mahabharata, we also find presented in a different way in Ramayana standards of dharma. Dharma means, in one level of thinking of dharma, is what is one's duty in life. And understanding what is one's duty in life can be very complex. Arjuna found it not only complex, very perplexing and complex. What to do? What is my duty? So he submitted to Krishna. Shishya teham shari mam tvam prapanam. Please instruct me. I become your shishya. Give me your instructions. What is my duty? Or earlier in Mahabharata, there's this situation where the Pandavas are in exile, and they become suddenly overwhelmed with thirst, so they're looking for water, and they go to a lake to drink water one by one, and they drink. A voice says, "Don't drink the water until you answer my questions," and they just drink the water and they fall over and they're just dead. So Yudhisthira, seeing his four brothers lying there, hears this voice. Because he's dharmic, the voice says, "Don't drink the water till you answer my questions." "Well, please present yourself so I can answer your questions." And the yaksha comes out of the lake. And it turns out the yaksha is his father, Yamaraj, who wants to examine Yudhisthira and the other Pandavas. What is their understanding of Dharma? So in the course of that dialogue, the questions by the yaksha, I'll just mention one. Yaksha says, Yudhisthira, your questions are all very nice. You have been answering my questions about Dharma, but sometimes there are situations when there is something that's to be done, and that's Dharma, that's your duty. And there's something else that's to be done, and that's Dharma or duty, and they're in conflict. You ever experienced that? We all experience that. You have to do something, but to do that something, it puts you in conflict with another something. Either another something can't be done, or if you do this something, it's going to hurt somebody or something, or there's a conflict situation. And we have to make a choice. Should we do this or should we do that? You follow? We need it all the time. And those that are evaluating, well, I should do those things that are based upon the principles of Dharma, and then I'll do that instead of the other. But sometimes there are principles of Dharma that are in conflict with one another. And what to do? That was the question, essentially. And what did Yudhisthira Maharaj say? "My dear Yaksha, what you say is true. It's very, very difficult. And therefore, the path that should be followed is the path of the great souls. Mahajana yena katasa panta." And Prabhupada referred to that hundreds of times. You have a word search in your electronic DBT writing. Put in Mahajana yena katasa panta and see how many times it comes up. Hundreds of times. Because it's so important. What should we do when we come across a situation where there's a conflict, either this or that? You do this, you're going to neglect that. Or you do that, you're going to neglect this. And it's a problem. And you follow the example of the Mahajans. That's what you do. So that means you need to be either learned in the scriptures, what's the example of the Mahajans, who are the Mahajans, and what's their example, or be guided by somebody who does know. And then you do that. And in the case of Ramchandra, he's establishing that standard. What is to be done when you have a conflicting situation? And the degree of the conflicting situation that he was put in, I heard a lecture where Prabhupada said, never before in the history and never since has there anyone that's been in the situation that Ramchandra was in. He was to be made the king the next day, And the evening before he was to be king the next day, and the whole citizenry was with great anticipation expecting their dearly loved Ramchandra was going to become their king. He was informed, you're not going to become the king. Your brother's going to become the king. And you go to the forest for 14 years, wearing tree bark. See you later. And Ramchandra's reply, because there was this big build-up, Kaikeyi thought, what if he doesn't accept? Even though Dasaratha has made his, given his pledge, two promises that he would fulfill, or two benedictions he would fulfill. Anyway, so a big production to get Ramchandra to say yes, and as soon as he heard what it was, his reply was, is that all, Mother? The order of my father is my life and soul. If my father wants me to jump in fire, I'll jump in fire. If my father wants me to become king, I'll become king. If my father wants me to go to the forest, I'll go to the forest. I'll leave at once. I'll leave first thing in the morning tomorrow, because it was at night. Why should you think that I would have any interest and anything other than the instruction of my father? That little passage, that exchange between Kaikeyi and Ram, is so important, so it's so telling. Kaikeyi, Valmiki says, she was surprised. She expected something. Resistance. Well, wait a minute, let's negotiate this. Hey, what's going on? I'm supposed to be king. Something. But she saw from his face that there was no change. There was no attachment to an expectation of something. Please note that in this world, fruit of attachment is very strong. Even in spiritual affairs, or trying to do a nice spiritual activity, attachment is, well, there's an expectation. Something's going to come. I do this, I get that. Fruitive. And what's that experience like, or where is the example of a situation where there's no attachment? A similar display comes also in the ninth canto, earlier, with Maharaj Ambarish. Similar, so I'll just go into it a little bit. When Maharaj Ambarish drinks water to break the Ekadasi fast, it was sips of the Charanamrita, of the bathing of his Krishna deity, because he had to break the Dwadasi fast, because it was a whole year-long Ekadasi Vrata that he was following, and Durvasa Muni hadn't come back from the river, from taking his bath yet. So when Durvasa Muni, being in the river, having the capacity to know that Maharaj Ambarish broke the fast first, he came back and threw a Durvasa Muni tantrum. He's a partial expansion of Lord Shiva. So he's also easily pleased, and he's also easily angered, Ashutosh, partial expansion. So he cursed Maharaj Ambarish, took some hairs from his head, dashed them to the ground, uttered a mantra, and created a fiery demon, and pointed the fiery demon at Maharaj Ambarish and said, kill him. He took water before I did. Very punishable, right? The description is, as the fiery demon was racing towards Maharaj Ambarish, neither his body moved, nor his mind moved. Amazing. I mean, he's a Kshatriya. He's, you know, protects. He's powerful. And just supposing something came rushing at you, what are you going to do? I mean, without even thinking, Your arms go up at least, and you brace your legs so that you're not going to get crushed and jump out of the way or something without even thinking. You do that. Maharaj Ambarish didn't. His body didn't move and his mind didn't move. Wow. But Sudarshan Chakra moved and cut down the fiery demon and then started pursuing Durvas Muni. So Ramchandra, similarly, his mind didn't move, his body didn't move, his face was unchanged. It said the face is the index of the mind. You've heard that one? There was no attachment. There was one attachment to the instruction of his father. And anything else was beneath that. So after he left the palace, he said, I have to go inform my mother that I'm not going to become king tomorrow, I'm going to the forest tomorrow. So he went to see Kaushalya. But Kaushalya was in shock. Kaushalya did her best, his mother, to persuade him, don't do this. And he was unmoved. I'm leaving tomorrow. It's the desire of Dasarath, my father. So how could I do anything but uphold the indication of my father? And then he went to inform Lakshman, leaving for the forest tomorrow. Lakshman was, you know, ready to tear anybody apart that would stand in the way of Ram becoming the king. Just give the indication. See these arms. See this bow. I'll cut down anybody. This is Dharma. You're the upholder of Dharma. The principle of Dharma is the eldest son is to become the inheritor of the throne. It's Dharma. Become the king. Everyone wants you to become the king, not just me. Everyone wants you to become the king. It's dharmic. Ram said no. Because here's this dilemma. There is something dharmic and there's something dharmic. And the something dharmic that he held above was his statement to Lakshman is the foundational principle of Dharma is truthfulness. If you can't stand by truthfulness, whatever other thing you follow, it's invalidated. It's subordinate to truthfulness. And my father has spoken. And I said I would follow what my father said. That's it. End of discussion. Any other principle is inconsequential. So, going forward, others also tried to convince him differently. The chief priest, later Bharat, when Bharat came, he tried to convince him. The others tried to convince him. Vashishtha tried to convince him. And the answer was, I'm going to follow the order of my father. I'm not going to depart from truthfulness. So we have there are different ideas, or say different levels of what truthfulness is. And one of them is, it also is spoken by Sita later, that truthfulness is you report things honestly and accurately. You don't report, I did steal your money when you stole a person's money or something like that. You report honestly. Were you late for your appointment? Well, yes, we were late because we were caught in traffic. We got here 7 minutes late, very sorry. But, you know, speak the truth. Don't speak lies. That's one standard. Then there's another standard where when you say something, you do it. A training that I received as a young devotee is a man is only as good as his word. When you give your word, you do it. And when you do it, when you give your word and do it, what happens? It earns trust. And when you say something and you don't do it, you have confidence in that person. So here's the ideal king who's given his word. He has to keep his word. Then there's another standard where he's keeping the word of his father. It's like in Chaitanya Charitamrita. There's a description where two brahmanas are on pilgrimage. It's in Madhyalila. And there's an elder and there's a younger brahmana. And the elder brahman is so pleased by the very kind assistance the younger brahman is giving. He says, I want to reciprocate. I couldn't have made this pilgrimage to the holy places in India without you. So I'd like to reciprocate and give as a gift my daughter in marriage to you. The younger brahman said, no, please don't speak like that. You're very wealthy and very learned and very aristocratic. I'm also a brahmana, but I don't have that high education and great wealth like you. Your family members are never going to accept this. Please don't speak this. No, I want to do it. She's my daughter. So you say we're in front of the deity. If you say something in front of the deity, you have to do it. I will do it. I will say it in front of the deity. I want to give my daughter to you in marriage. So what happened is when they went back, the elder Brahmin said to his family, I've given our daughter in marriage to this Brahmin who helped me. Served me so nicely. And the elder brother said, no way. He's poor and we're rich. Well, it's a mismatch. No good. The mother said, oh, if you do this, I'll kill myself. So here he's in a dilemma. He's got to do it, keep his word, but if he does it, there's going to be undesirable consequences. There's one of those examples. Something to do, keep your word, do something else, you got a problem. What to do? So the younger Brahmin, to uphold the word of another, the elder Brahmin, he went all the way to Vrindavan and pleaded with the deity, you're the witness. Shakshi Gopal, you're the witness. Please come with me to Orissa and tell everybody that this promise was made, because the promise was made before you. And then the deity spoke and said, have you ever heard of a deity going halfway across India walking? And the young Brahmin said, if the deity can speak, the deity can walk. So please come with me, bear witness. So the deity agreed to come. And to this day, Shakshi Gopal is being worshipped in Rissi. Came all the way from Vrindavan to Orissa and bore witness. So the marriage took place. So acting in such a way where you're not just upholding your word, but you're protecting the religious principles of another. That's what Ram did. He upheld the word of his father. There's another level altogether of upholding the truth, and that's the absolute truth, or the capital A and the capital T. Absolute truth. And taking shelter of the absolute truth is the highest principle of truthfulness, and one should never depart from that truthfulness. But with that comes these other kinds of responsibilities. So Ram is showing, as an ideal king, never depart from the truth. And that's a lesson for us. If we have a issue of what to do, this, that, some challenging decision to make, one thing is, make sure you never depart from the truth. If one of those choices pulls you in the direction of going away from the truth, don't go there. Just eliminate that option. Or devalue it, at least. Make it so that you don't depart from the truth. Because if you depart from the truth, then everything else that looks to be of value, looks to be good, It's not good. The consequences are not good. You may not see them immediately, but the consequences are not good. Never depart from the truth. There's so many nice examples from our devotional teachings, but there's a very nice example from Ram. And last point, I'm watching the clock, we have 10 minutes to go. After Lakshman roars and tries to persuade Ram to not go to the forest and to accept the coronation the following day, as everybody wants, after Lakshman accepted Ram's position, then Ram spoke some philosophy. And the philosophy was, I can see by the way the events have unfolded. This you can see if you're dispassionate, if you're not attached. If you're dispassionate or unattached and in a neutral or a transcendental place, you can see like Ram saw. He said, it's very clear to me that this is very abnormal. The way that Kaikeyi spoke and behaved, she had more affection for me than her own sons. She always spoke like that. That's her nature. The way that she conducted herself, this is completely abnormal.